Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I know this show isn't or wasn't originally on the show roster, not on the schedule. It's a last-minute addition, just an extra. It's totally free to the patrons and everybody. It's just one of those things I wanted to throw out there to have as part of the conversation in light of some recent court rulings that have just come down. And I had the chance to have a conversation with a couple of legal experts, secular legal experts, to talk about the rulings and the implications. So it's kind of a two-part show. The first conversation with Andrew Seidel. He is a constitutional attorney for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and he's talking about this ruling that just came down in the Trinity Lutheran case. And I know a lot of people have seen the headlines about Trinity Lutheran, but they're not sure exactly what it all means. The Supreme Court on Monday of this week, it's a rule that the efforts at separating church and state go too far when they deny religious institutions access to government grants that are meant for a secular purpose. And this has to do with Trinity Lutheran, a church in Missouri that had been denied money, taxpayer money, and it went to the Supreme Court over this deal. And so I wanted someone to give some clarity to the case and tell us why the Supreme Court's ruling is so tragic and so backward and so wrong-headed. Andrew Seidel is going to give us the details and his perspective. And then I just released the video of a conversation I had with Monica Miller. She's senior counsel at the American Humanist Association. You know, she was part of this Pensacola Cross controversy, right? It's a Bayview Cross. It's on parkland. It's on taxpayer-funded land. And a federal judge just ruled that the cross has to come down. And so people have gone after Monica in a way that I just can't believe, calling her the worst of names. I think there were some implied threats, if not overt threats, against her safety. She's really put herself out there. Hemet Mehta did a Patheos article about the whole story. I'll link that article in the description box. You should go read it because he screenshotted some of the tweets against Monica by the supposed Jesus followers, and it blows my mind. It is absolutely unbelievably nasty and offensive to the extreme and worthy of our condemnation. And so Monica Miller and I talked about the Pensacola case, the ruling, and this just unbelievable avalanche of vitriol that's been pointed in her direction in the aftermath of that ruling. And that'll be the second part of this bonus podcast today. But first, I talked to Andrew Seidel. He is a constitutional attorney for the FFRF. And Andrew, it's great to talk to you once again.
Always a pleasure.
I need someone who is a constitutional attorney who speaks the language, who can sort of put into layman's terms what we are up against with this sort of church-state violation. That is the ruling that just came down, Trinity Lutheran versus Comer. Can you sort of synopsize what this is all about?
Sure. So this is a case where the state of Missouri was offering to help playgrounds get resurfaced. To rubberize the surface of playgrounds, ostensibly to make it safer for kids to go out and play. Now, the Missouri Constitution has a provision in it that specifically says that public money can't go to churches. So basically, they said churches are not eligible for this program. So Trinity Lutheran Church, which runs this, they call it a learning center, attached to their church, has a playground at it. And they wanted $20,000 from this fund to resurface their playground. And the state said, actually, you're not eligible because you're a church, because we'd be giving this money to a Christian learning center. That's never been upheld by the Supreme Court before. Funding government money going for a religious purpose has never been upheld. And in this case, the Supreme Court changed its mind in a 7-2 decision that has a number of problems legally, logically, and procedurally. It's a very, very frustrating decision.
Can you explain sort of this temperature change? It seems like a temperature change at the Supreme Court, or am I just being paranoid in the era of Trump?
No, no, it's a sea change. This is far and away one of the biggest shifts that we've ever seen. It's huge. So, I mean, one thing that I think everybody who is listening to this really needs to keep in mind what this learning center, what the Trinity Lutheran Learning Center does. So the church says that it, quote, it's for, quote, preaching, teaching, that's important, worship, witness, service, and fellowship according to the word of God. Its mission, according to it, is to make disciples. And one of the things that it uses to do that is the learning center for these kids. And it says on their website, if you go to the Trinity Lutheran website and click on their ministry tabs, it says that the Learning Center is a, quote, ministry of the church and incorporates daily religion and developmentally appropriate activities into its program. Okay, so this isn't about playgrounds or about skinned knees or about keeping kids safe. That's what the other side has done a very good job of pushing that narrative. And it's been very compelling in the media, and it was compelling for the judges. But that's not what this is about. This is about the government funding a religious ministry that targets children. The state said, we can't do that. The Supreme Court said, you have to do that. The dissent phrased it nicely. Sotomayor, in her dissent, she said, through the Learning Center, the church teaches a Christian worldview to children of members of the church as well as children of non-member residents of the area. So this is $20,000 of government money going to fund a ministry that targets children. And
essentially, taxpayer money now is helping to enhance an indoctrination center. I mean, if we were to look at it, I mean, if you and I are looking at it as secular people, yeah,
I think that's absolutely right. And that was one of the most frustrating things about watching this case. And FFRF submitted a brief to the Supreme Court, but you know, listening, you don't get to participate in the oral argument. You know, listening to the oral argument, it was so frustrating because they kept focusing on this discrimination. It's about discriminating against religion. And it's just not. Rather, this case is about augmenting the already special treatment that churches receive under state church separation. Right? So under state church separation, that's the doctrine that's embodied in our Constitution. That is what we have lived and died by. It's a uniquely American invention. And it gives churches some significant benefits, and it imposes a few minor burdens. So some of the benefits, you know, people can probably think of these pretty easily. They're tax exempt. They get to discriminate against people based on their religion when they're hiring or firing, which makes sense. You know, a Christian church shouldn't have to hire a rabbi to be their preacher, right? That makes sense. They're given extensive freedom to determine internal matters, but courts will actually not weigh in on internal matters of churches often, and they certainly will never weigh in on questions of theology. So with all these benefits, there comes a few burdens. And what the court has done in this case is say, no, 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 you get all the benefits, but you don't have to have any burdens. So basically, they get to have their cake, which is now bought and paid for by the American taxpayers, and eat it too.
I'm reminded of the lawsuit that American Atheists brought against, I don't know, was it they bring it against the federal government or a branch of the government or the Internal Revenue Service? Or it was about these sort of exemptions that churches enjoy that other nonprofits do not. You know, they get things like parsonage exemptions, which exist beyond the line item salary of the pastors. Oh, yeah, you know, he only makes $50,000 a year, but they don't say that he doesn't have a mortgage payment and all of his groceries are paid for and all these other expenses are just handled by the church. They're not required to line item as much. It's a double standard, a different set of rules. Have you gotten into that at all, Andrew?
Actually, we have, and FFRF is the lawsuit you're thinking of. We've sued over the parsonage exemption. We've sued over the Form 990, which churches don't have to fill out. That tracks every penny that comes into a nonprofit and every penny that goes out, and churches are exempt from filing that. We've also sued over just getting your 501c3 status. It's basically just a pro forma thing. Churches are just given it. So we've actually sued the IRS 4 or 5 different times on that and have a couple other lawsuits coming down the pike shortly.
I must be thinking of something else. I had Silverman on the radio and he was speaking years ago about a specific lawsuit, but I thought American Atheist was behind it. Who knows? It's probably been tackled on many occasions, right?
And I was going to say, I think they filed a lawsuit about the Form 990 also. I'm pretty sure we're the only group to take the parsonage exemption case, though. But that's part of the point, too, right, is even with these benefits that they get under the separation of state and church, some of them can go too far. And we have argued and will continue to argue that some of those benefits are inappropriate in the parsonage exemption. And for those of everybody who doesn't know, that means that an individual preacher, the language in the IRS code in Section 107 actually says a, quote, minister of the gospel, that's in our law, can exclude income that is designated for their housing from their income. So if the church pays them $10,000 a month and says that $5,000 a month of that is for, well, we'll say $3,000 a month of that is for your housing, then the income that pastor is paying is only on the remaining $7,000. And because they can also deduct their mortgage payments and stuff, it ends up this double dipping. They actually get far more benefits from the tax code than you or I would. And it's for people, you know, like all these mega preachers who have these, you know, $5, $10, $20 million mansions. Those are their parsonage.
Oh, yeah, I'm reminded of that deposition video from Minister David Taylor from a couple of years ago. You know, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, he's doing a deposition trying to justify the fact that he's got a $3 million mansion, drives a Bentley, he's wearing Louis Vuitton, he's taking all of these swank vacations, and they're talking about the necessity of these things for ministry. And he's still trying to justify that somehow he needs all of these things to properly minister the gospel to you know, the sheeple. And I just look at him and I think, God, try that at any other 501c3 and they'd be crucifying you. And yet people still rush to his defense. It's crazy.
It really is. And I mean, and that the U.S. taxpayer, we're paying for that house, basically.
I can hear the people defending the playground thing. I mean, you're busy talking about the Constitution, the Establishment Yes. Clause, the church-state line established by the founders, and they're screaming at the top of their lungs, but the children!
and that is the brilliance of the case, to be honest. It is, from any other optic except the First Amendment, and the conflict between the first clause of the First Amendment and the second clause. So it says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And so those two clauses are often in tension. And that this case throws all of that out in favor of, but the kids. And it's unbelievable because the Supreme Court bought into that. All but two of the judges bought into that. I mean, this is the oldest, most hallowed principle that we have. In 1785, when Virginia was talking about instituting a three-penny tax on taxpayers that would go to a church of their choice or to Christian teachers, which was the same as preachers back then, generally, James Madison opposed that, and a lot of religious groups came out and opposed it with him as a violation of religious freedom. And he wrote arguably the greatest defense of the separation of state and church that's ever been written. It's called The Memorial and Remonstrance. It's probably 5 pages, if you're on your computer. I highly recommend everybody go read it. It's phenomenal still to this day. And he was arguing against a three-penny tax, and now we're talking about $20,000 of taxpayer money going. And this is opening the floodgates. It really is, in a way that we haven't seen. I think a lot of people, if they've been paying attention to the news around the case, they may have heard that the decision is limited, that there was a footnote in the case, footnote 3. It's kind of become, I don't know if it's just infamous among nerds like myself or if it's actually out in the broader public, but in it, the court says this opinion is limited to resurfacing playgrounds. Which sounds great, and I'm all for that, except today, so the Trinity Lutheran was yesterday, and so Tuesday, the court actually sent some of the cases it was looking at back to the lower courts, voucher cases, three voucher cases from Colorado, and said, you need to re-examine these cases in light of our decision in Trinity Lutheran. Right there, you know it's not as limited as it should be.
Is it a litany now of churches lining up? Hey, wait a minute. You know, these guys got it. Now we could be next. I mean, does this open the floodgates, you think?
I am very, very concerned that it does, yes. I mean, it's, you know, we're still in a little bit of shock that the opinion came down the way it did. I mean, after oral argument, this was actually what I guessed. I should have put money on it after oral argument, really. At least there would have been a silver lining in this monstrosity somewhere. But I am very concerned that the floodgates have opened here.
And because it's the Supreme Court, how screwed are we? I mean, we're just stuck.
Well, so there are a few issues with the case, too. You know, I mentioned there was a procedural issue with the case. And as a result of that, the majority's opinion is incredibly deficient in one respect. So if we can back up a little bit, as the case was being litigated on its way up to the Supreme Court, you remember the initial issue was that the state denied the church these funds. It says you're not eligible for the funds. But before the case was argued at the Supreme Court, the Missouri governor changed that policy and said, no, no, the church is eligible for these funds and we should give the church that money. So when the case was argued before the Supreme Court, the state agreed with the church on what should happen in the case. And the oral argument really reflected that. So basically, in legal terms, there's no adversity. Right, so our whole legal system is predicated on two opposing sides battling it out, you know, duking it out, and it's meant to be this adverse system. And I'm sure you and some of your listeners have heard many times one of the issues that all the groups, American Atheists, FFRF, AHA, we face is standing. Right, you need to have standing to bring a challenge that the government has violated the Constitution. And that usually means you need to be injured. And the reason that courts say you need to have standing is because they want to ensure that you are a party that has an interest in the outcome of the lawsuit. But if both the parties agree in the outcome of the lawsuit, there's no interest, right? They agree what should happen. And it really, really impacted the oral argument and the majority opinion. And the reason that it did that is because it kind of blows my mind. The majority opinion said that there was no Establishment Clause concerns because the parties agreed that there were not any.
That makes no sense. I mean, it's like saying we met at a bar and talked about it, so hey, right? I mean, to completely ignore the constitutional framework beyond it.
You are absolutely right. It makes absolutely no sense. And it's so frustrating to see this happening because if you do analyze this in light of the Establishment Clause along with the Free Exercise Clause, first of all, there's a bunch of other opinions that have come out the other way, and just history dictates that this should have come out the other way. So the reason that they were able to create this sea change is because there was no adversity, because the parties agreed on what should happen. And so the strongest argument in the case was completely ignored by everyone. And that, so when FFRF submitted our brief, we submitted it with the ACLU and Americans United. You know, that was the argument we were making. We were making this argument and we weren't even a party to the lawsuit. So it was incredibly frustrating. And I will say this, Sotomayor's dissent, which Ginsburg joined, was pretty phenomenal. And she hit them pretty hard on this point. She said that constitutional questions are decided by this court, not by the party's concessions. And I think that is going to come back and haunt this court, because you generally can't have a sea change in the law like this. You can't have this drastic departure without some seriously well-reasoned case law. And that is just not here. What you have here is essentially an emotional opinion based on little kids getting hurt.
And you've got articles like the one that was released in Forbes. I mean, the title of the article is, let me make sure I get it right here, Supreme Court Protects Religious Freedom in Trinity Lutheran Case. I mean, even the headline's misleading, for Pete's sake.
I mean, absolutely. And that's because the court decided this on the Free Exercise Clause alone. And they ignore the Establishment Clause altogether.
Well, back to my original question, though. I mean, sure. If we look at the Supreme Court near the top of the pyramid here, are we just stuck with it? You know, I mean, can anything else happen? Or
my guess is a couple things are going to happen. First, I think there's going to be some backlash the moment a mosque gets some public money under a program of some kind. And it's going to happen.
Just figure Lucian Greaves and his friends over at the Satanic Temple come knocking on the door, you know, hey, we got a Baphomet statue and some and a merry-go-round and whatnot. We could sure use some of those taxpayer funds. We'll watch the Mike Huckabee crowd's reaction to that when it comes to religious freedom, right?
Exactly. And it's going to happen. And my money's on a mosque because there is a lot of – there are some public grant programs floating around for beefing up security at certain schools and places that have threats. And with the rise of Trump, we've seen that minority religions, you know, Judaism and Islam in particular, the adherence to those religions have faced a pretty severe backlash under Trump. So I think you're going to see some Jewish schools, maybe some Muslim schools or maybe mosques or temples applying for security grants is going to be my guess. And as soon as public money goes to protect a mosque, I think there's going to be an outcry. And there's no reason that this case can't give the mosque the same right that it gave this church. So I think that's my guess. That's where you're going to see it happen.
Be careful what you wish for, kind of a thing, huh?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I think that's probably one positive note.
Andrew Seidel, constitutional attorney for the FFRF. I referred someone to you just this morning. In fact, I had somebody, they were an Oklahoma parent, and they discovered that their teachers of their child's elementary school was doing like a morning prayer in public school, pre-class prayer, you know, like it's the first thing you do. You say your pledges and you do the prayer. And so I'd like go to FFRF, go to legal, contact those guys because they handle this all the time. And you do, right?
That's what we do. We handle more than 1,000 of those issues every year. About half of them are in public schools. A lot of teachers still think they have the right to use their public position to promote their personal religion, or rather to impose that personal religion on other people's children. Yeah. And so that's why we exist. That's what we do. I mean, you know, we have now 7 attorneys on staff that handle cases from people like the family you just sent to us. That's what we do.
Your inbox must be insane, but I'll send more people. If you know of a violation happening, I mean, that's the work they do is amazing. FFRF.org. We'll follow the story. Andrew Seidel, thanks for your perspective and your input. Greatly appreciated, sir.
Thank you, Seth.
We go from a loss to a victory as we shift gears and talk about this Bayview Cross in Pensacola. On parkland, on taxpayer-funded property, Monica Miller, heavily involved with the American Humanist Association, arguing against the use of taxpayer funds to have this big religious icon. A federal judge says the cross has to come down within 30 days. That ruling was handed out just a few days ago. And then Monica Miller immediately becomes the target of some of the worst, the nastiest language on the internet I've seen recently. A guy named Lou said, "Let's make her famous and run her out of town." He posted her contact information online. A guy named Greg said she won the What a Cunt of the Year award. A woman named Sandra posted next to Monica's photograph 3 emojis of handguns. A guy named Gerald called her a fucking cunt. Stuart said, "Atheist, moron, hypocrite, needs to go bye-bye, like to Afghanistan or Iraq." Nancy said she looks like she thinks she's beautiful and sexy. She's ugly as sin. Literally. David said it's just a shame nobody made her famous and turned her into a hit-and-run victim. A person coming to Monica's defense on social media said, "If harm comes to this lady, it'll be on your head, all of your heads." But Betty, an apparent Christian, said, "No. It will be on her own head because she's making a choice to turn her back on God, so she will have no protection from God because of her decision. Others are not responsible for what she is doing." Well, in light of all this, I had the opportunity to speak with Monica Miller senior counsel for the American Humanist Association. She is, of course, an attorney. She's been with the AHA for about half a decade, I guess, now. She is, if you've read the recent headlines, also an agent of Beelzebub, an eater of children, a hater of freedom and justice all around the world. I'm sure you probably have. I mean, obviously, anyone who has received the amount of vitriol that you have seen in the last week must, I mean, this must resonate with you, right, Monica? They're coming after you big time, correct?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, you know, it's not unique for me to be the target of some angry Christians, you know, in these lawsuits we bring, but this particular case generated a lot of ill will towards me, specifically as a result of our success in the Pensacola Cross case.
Okay, well, that's why we're speaking. We're talking about Pensacola, Florida. Set it up for those who are not familiar with the story. The cross in a city park in Pensacola?
That's right. Yes.
Okay, well, give me the details.
For sure. So the city has owned, maintained, has restored this cross that it's had on its property for since about the 1970s, early 1970s. The city's cross, it's on city property. So it's a clear violation of the First Amendment, the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. So we joined forces with the Freedom From Religion Foundation and successfully had it removed. Now, mind you, that the judge that ruled against the cross was a Reagan-appointed judge. He was not a liberal judge, as the conservatives like to sort of blame in these cases. He was very, you know, he didn't want to rule in our favor, and he made that point very clear, but he recognized the law as the law, and this thing must come down. But yeah, so that's sort of the background.
It's interesting that the judge always feels the need when, well, I say always, so many cases, a religious judge operating by the letter of the law still has to throw the editorial in there. They also said, now, I personally wish it wasn't the case. I don't think it's really just in my heart, but the Constitution or the letter of the law says this. It's like a knee jerk. They have to throw it in.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, you know, I think it actually works to our advantage because should the city decide to appeal, it's such a clear case. I mean, it just sort of highlights the fact that this is such a clear case. When you have a judge that so desperately wants to rule against us, is still finding his hands tied by the law. I mean, so I understand completely what you're saying, but
come on, Monica, it's just a cross. It doesn't hurt anybody. You know, it makes people happy. It's part of their heritage. I'm trying to find the cliches and throw them at you. You've probably heard many more than these even over the last 5-7 days, right?
Right, absolutely. But, you know, the point is that the cross can stand on city property. There's tons and tons of crosses in Pensacola, Florida. They don't need one on the city's property. All that says to, you know, the residents is that the city prefers their religion over all the others and over non-religion. So for the residents there that are atheists, you know, they have to, you know, day in and day out see this cross that represents the city's preference for some other religion that's not their own.
So if Lucian Greaves and the Satanic Temple folks show up with a Baphomet statue for that same park, I mean, do you think these folks would be as eager to protect religious, quote unquote, freedom?
Absolutely not. I mean, I've tried to bring up that point, you know, before, even in fact, in court, I mentioned to the judge, you know, this would probably be a very different situation we'd be in if this was an Islamic star and crescent, you know, some other symbol, not a Christian one. And I think, you know, of course, he's a judge. He can understand that that would be the case. But I think a lot of these citizens, I mean, they think they truly believe that this is a Christian city. Because of these sort of relations that the city has demonstrated its preferences. And that's not the country that we live in, where we have a Christian city over here and an Islamic city over here. No, it's the government's supposed to be neutral for a reason.
Hey, Monica, is Pensacola where these sort of batshit city council meetings have been taking place with the prayer and they look like revival services? Is that Pensacola?
I believe so. I know our plaintiff, David Suhor, did an invocation in the name of Satan, for lack of a better word.
Well, I know that the David Williamson and Jocelyn Williamson have been involved in getting secular invocations integrated in. I mean, if you're going to have an invocation, you might as well make room at the table for people who are not Christian, who are of other faiths or no faith, and they're having some success down there, as I understand it. So.
That's correct, yeah. Exactly.
So the backlash against you begins.
Yes.
I mean, paint the picture for me.
It began right away. I mean, it's pretty much as soon as that decision came down, I started getting calls, you know, from upset people, calling me you know, sort of derogatory, sexist remarks. And, you know, that we get that a little bit, but this sort of was coming on pretty strong, pretty fast. And then we discovered online a gentleman in Pensacola, or at least in Florida, created a collage of my, I took a selfie with the cross the day before the case, the hearing, and then took a snapshot of my profile here at AHA, and said something to the effect of, here's the idiot attorney that got the cross removed, let's run her out of town, I guess thinking I was from the area. And then that got shared like about 14,000 times. So yeah, we certainly saw an influx of phone calls from that. But fortunately we also actually got not just the hate, but actually a ton of support from people around the world. And including donations to the American Humanist Association in this gentleman's name, which we thought was a little bit funny. So it's actually kind of been a net positive experience for the Humanist Association as far as the support we've received.
Yeah, you're in a point position. You're not stupid. You expect this kind of thing. You know, it's not a popular fight in a culturally Christian nation that is seeing the rise of secularism. So now they're freaking out. You know, their hold on the conversation, their monopoly on power is drifting away, and they're freaking, and they're calling it an attack on Christianity. It's not church state separation. It's not the upholding of the Constitution. It's a personal attack against their faith. But I'm amazed at, I say amazed, I guess I'm not surprised at just how nasty much of this stuff got. I mean, what would Jesus do, right? Would Jesus call you the type of stuff they were calling you?
Right. No, I know. I mean, that's the thing too, is like, I guess sometimes I'm not surprised because I've been doing this for quite a while now, but you still do just the hypocrisy kind of, it does make you just think this is so strange that these people that, you know, especially we're fighting about this cross, right? That supposedly Jesus, you know, was crucified to. There's nothing kind of Christ-like about calling someone a cunt. Like, I mean, just all the slew of derogatory words and.
Have you encountered people within the church, believers, who are proponents of church-state separation? I know the FFRF says that there are allies within churches who often come and stand alongside them in these fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally have received a lot of messages from Christians that have said, you know, I'm a Christian, but I think that even if I want the cross there, I think that the attacks against you personally are completely not within, you know, what I believe Christianity is and that kind of thing. So we have that category of people who just don't think that the type of, you know, messages that I'm receiving are appropriate. But then we also have plenty of Christian supporters who also don't think the cross should be there in the first place because they recognize that, you know, there's a difference again between city property and private property.
Can we look at the United States of America, Monica? And I think to myself, do we not have enough private property for all of these religious symbols? How many churches, how many thousands of churches, how many private lawns and how much private acreage is there? Why are these people so freaky over public land?
Right. It's really bizarre. It really is. And I find it kind of ironic that they like to call our plaintiffs and our people, you know, the liberal snowflakes and, oh, why do you care so much about a cross? We kind of like, well, why do you? You know, I mean, it's like, this doesn't belong on city property. It's a very simple, clean case. You have other crosses, you know, but you know, they get so worked up over it.
I saw a great line on Twitter. It said snowflake, and it was a tweak at some of these sort of gun-toting God and country types. It said snowflake, someone who believes that they have to pack a gun to go out and buy a sandwich. And I thought, you know, that's a great line. Anybody else look at the construction? I mean, let's just talk about the crosses themselves. I mean, is there a bigger demonstration of theological masturbation in this world than the erection, pardon the pun, of these massive, expensive, you know, 80, 100, 200-foot crosses? And, you know, even if they're placed on private land, we're subjected to them from way over here on the hill. And I think just hungry children not occur to these people, you know, cancer cures, those types. I mean, what is this really where you want your money to go? Do you ever have these conversations in your own head?
I mean, I definitely do. I mean, even just today, you know, you probably saw the news about the gentleman who rammed his car into the Ten Commandments monument that was just put up. But, you know, that monument, private citizens donated apparently the money, but it, you know, was about $20,000. It's probably going to cost the state a whole lot more to defend it once we all sue them. And, you know, it's like, well, that $20,000 could go to homelessness. It could go to, you know, starving children. I mean, really, you can think of a plethora of things that people could spend their money on rather than just erecting giant religious monuments, especially on government property.
But, I'm glad you brought up the Ten Commandments. So this guy smashes, I mean, it's up for what, a day? Guy smashes his car into it and destroys it. And I'm seeing, I saw Andrew Seidel from the FFRF and many others, I think the Secular Coalition for America and a few other organizations, publicly denouncing it. They're like, look, we are against the erection of the Ten Commandments monument. We think it's wrong in every way. But we don't condone vandalism and violence against the monument itself. Do you want to speak to that?
Oh, 100%. Neither does the AHA. I mean, it's we don't want to send a message of destruction or violence, you know, because that's the wrong message. The reason why we're here, the reason why we have lawyers, is to go through the proper channels, to go through the courts, and to use the system, not to go against it. It doesn't help our cause at all.
Is there anything we can do to help you? And the AHA, and I mean, how can we help prevent this sort of insanity in the future?
You know, I think what happened in this particular instance with that thing that the gentleman shared, you know, with my picture, you know, seeing so many people kind of come to my defense and explain the Constitution to others, and you know, explain like what I was doing, and you know, just kind of come to my defense in these social media forums really was absolutely great. I mean, that made me feel like, okay, these people really do have my back. Like, you know, I'm doing the right thing, you know, and just kind of giving that encouragement at a time where you're like, am I in the right career? You know, so it's like, it does, I think that alone just really helps. And, you know, I mean, people can become members of AHA and, you know, just support us that way. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'd want people to do that very thing. You know, you're really taking the fight out there, and you're doing the work that many of us either aren't or cannot do. Maybe we're not qualified. We're not attorneys. You know, we're not constitutional experts, or maybe it's just not what we do, but we can support you. When I saw this avalanche of just nastiness come your way, I wanted to take a few minutes and just have a conversation about what it was about, what your response is, and how we can support you. What's the website to the American Humanist Association?
AmericanHumanist.org.
AmericanHumanist.org. Visit the website, support the organization. Monica will follow your story, and thank you. You know, thank you for you know, swinging for the fences and putting up with all of this vitriol and all this poison that's coming at you. Just know that there are many of us who we're just fans. We're fans of what you're about. We're so glad you're out there doing what you do. Don't give up. Keep the faith. I guess I say keep the faith. Just hang in there and keep kicking, okay?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Monica. Lots of work ahead of us, my friends, but I'm so thankful for my guests and for the work that they are doing in this fight against insanity out there. We're back next Tuesday, a conversation between myself and a new apostate who shares her story. Her name is Sarah. I will see you here in a few days. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.